Welcome to China Manufacturing Decoded from Sofeast, the podcast where we take you through some of the major topics facing importers and manufacturers in China today.
Hi again, listener. Thanks for joining us over here at China Manufacturing Decoded. It's episode 32. Adrian from Sofeast here, and I'm joined, as usual, by our CEO, Renaud. Today, we're discussing a very important document, the Bill of Materials. So, what is the BOM? What does it contain? And how do we keep it secure? And if you're thinking, it's a document, how secure does it need to be? This includes all of the information required to produce any product. So I'm not just talking about a list of parts or materials. I'm talking about pricing, supplier information, whether the supplier has passed your quality standards and everything else. So it's a really important document, and we're going to look into what it's all about right now. Hi, Renaud. Thanks for joining me again. How are you doing?
Hey, not too bad. Getting a bit cold here. I guess it's worse on your side, right?
Yeah, a bit of a difference between South China and Europe at the moment. I think probably temperature-wise, definitely cold here. I'm frozen. Thanks for catching up with me again today. In this episode, I want to get into a very important document for importers, which is the Bill of Materials, or BOM. So really, to just get straight down into it, can you tell me what is a BOM in short?
Every product has a BOM, whether it's documented or not. If you do some woodworking in your basement and you make some kind of toy or some kind of piece of furniture, you're not going to document anything. However, in a factory, it's kind of a must, except if the product is super, super simple. But even though it's super simple, if there are quality requirements and you want it to be very replicable over time, you want a BOM. So basically, a BOM is the list of the components, parts, materials, accessories, whatever you call it, from, I don't know, if you take a piece of furniture, if you have a table, you have the flat panel, you have the feet, maybe the rubber feet, and you have all the packing stuff, and there might be maybe, I don't know, a sticker on the packing and so on and so forth. Well, there might be glue, there might be screws. Do not forget anything. All of this needs to be listed. One row is one component or material, right? If it's a bra, that you're going to have the fabrics, and you know, they have the different accessories, the elastics, the bows and the rings and the hook and eyes and all these kind of things, but also the potty bags, the cartons and so on. If you make an electronic product, I don't know, maybe a smartphone, well, you're going to have the PCB and the memory chip and the display and the casing and all the little things, right? So a simple product has a BOM of maybe 5 lines, 10 lines. A complicated product like a car has 4,000 or 5,000 lines. Mm. Really, 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 really complex kind of product, say maybe a fighter jet that can go supersonic. They have so many rivets for everything that they can go up to 500,000 lines, right? Wow. So actually, one line is one kind of component. So if one component is repeated a lot of times, then you don't go one line for each, right? You just have one line for it. And then you say one product consumes 1,000 rivets, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Imagine a container ship or something like that, right?
Right, of course.
And then if you say, well, I don't know, for the face masks, we were talking about that a lot in March and April when it was crazy. And, well, one face mask is what fraction of a roll of melt-blown fabric, right? So it can be a multiple fraction, right? So you try to take into account what the consumption is of that material component. And a lot of buyers have never seen a BOM for their products. It doesn't mean there's no BOM. Now, the BOM is extremely sensitive information, actually. It's highly confidential. for several reasons. First, for let's say for keeping information close to the vest when making a product for a customer. So a lot of suppliers say, well, if I did the work of searching for the components and, you know, playing with things and making it work, and the customer did not pay for that, I'm not going to give them the information about what goes into the product, right? So from that point of view, that's fair, right? Now, the problem is that buyers, by not paying for this information, by counting on the supplier to do all that work, yes, it's normal, they will not have the bomb in their hands. And what does that mean? Well, when the supplier changes one of the components, then the buyer is left to scratch his or her head and say, well, how come this is a little bit different, you know? How come the finishing is a bit different, or how come the functionality is a bit different, the volume is a bit different, the power is a bit different, it breaks more easily or whatever, you know, what changed exactly, right? And sometimes we have to do teardowns and comparison down to the component to understand, because buyers are really left in the dark, and then that's really leaving the door open to suppliers to do whatever they want. And Chinese suppliers, Chinese OEM suppliers, and ODM suppliers even more, are not shy about making changes without telling you, right, if you're the buyer. So if you have a bomb, it's kind of, they know that they committed to something to you, right? So of course, you know some of the information of the bomb. If you say, well, this is going to be silicon, this is, you know, that's already something they committed to. They cannot change it to something different. Or maybe they will think that maybe you will not notice. Maybe it's a cheaper version of silicon. Or there are ways to play games, but at least at the rough level, people kind of have an idea. You know, this table, it's MDF. Okay, and this display, you know, on the tablet that I'm buying, I don't know what it is, but I know the amount of memory on it. I know the size of the display. I know that the casing is supposed to be aluminum in that color, and so on and so forth, right? So people have bits and little bits of and pieces of the bomb, but they don't know the full bomb. So the suppliers think that, hey, it's my product, I do what I want. They just buy the finished product. It doesn't matter to them how we make it and what we make it with. And that's how you get into so many quality issues, because for a buyer, I mean, this is a nightmare. So the fact that the manufacturer thinks they can change anything in the product, really, as long as it's not too obvious, that's kind of the way of thinking, can actually be disastrous. If you want to do things sort of by the book and really reduce your risks, you are going to work with a testing lab as the buyer. You're going to send them some samples. They're going to test it to Ridge, to Ross, to California Prop 65, to FCC, whatever. Okay. And you get to the point where you say, okay, I have a compliant product. I'm going to make whatever, 5,000 pieces of it. And then you have a new batch, and you say, I'm going to make another, whatever, 8,000 pieces. Well, between the first batch and the second batch, maybe the manufacturer changes something, and the second batch is non-compliant. And that might have a lot of implications that manufacturers in China are oblivious to. They don't really go through, you know, a proper risk analysis, and they don't do the testing on their side and all these kind of things, you know, or maybe in a very rough way. So this is just a nightmare for some buyers, you know. They don't have the bomb, and the supplier changes things, and they don't know when it's going to happen. They don't know when it's going to strike them. And yeah.
So you could be importing products which are, you think are compliant, and in actual fact, they're just not compliant at all.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And
wow.
That there's, and there might be no way of for you to know that except redoing all the testing. But who does all the testing again for every batch, right? Not many people. Not for consumer goods, right? So that's a terrible problem. And the source of it again is that the buyer does not have the bill of material, right? So it's kind of hard for them to double check and to see, oh, you know, the manufacturer doesn't feel like they have to disclose the fact that there's been a change, right? I think the lack of communication of the BOM, the bill of material, is the number one reason for that.
Right. I can see how important that is now. So definitely caution required if working with OEMs or ODMs who may not be keen on disclosing what the BOM is. And I suppose if you've got that dialogue with your manufacturer about what the BOM is, and it's sort of a living document, you've both got access to it. Perhaps it's updated as and when changes are made. So if more testing is required, that's great. I suppose then that the BOM is actually a document which is started quite early in the new product development process.
Oh, of course. So, okay, let's say you're developing a new product, you're designing it. Well, when you do the initial sketches of the product, you already have to think, what kind of material is this going to be? You have to think, you know, what are the functionalities maybe of the product, or what are the special requirements and so on. And you have at the same time to design maybe the shape, the appearance, functionality, and together with the materials and the components, at least the main ones. Now, you may not go into all the small details. you might still hesitate between two or three kinds of plastics. You might not specify the exact grade of steel, you know. However, you're already thinking of that. Okay, that's the concept BOM, if you want. But you know, you can already start actually to list these materials and components. Then, as you make more progress and you go deeper into the design, into the details of it, you're gonna have to go deeper also in the bill of material, right? As the design BOM, and as you make a prototype, well, you're gonna have to order some parts somewhere somehow. So definitely you start to have a BOM here, right? So try to document things, try to order parts that come from suppliers that you think are safe to work with, because then you can keep the same component all the way through to mass production, hopefully. So as you test things around and you confirm things and you validate assumptions and so on, all through the design and development, if you can keep some of the same components unchanged, then that's, you know, things are a little bit simpler and faster for you, right? So that's the prototype BOM. And actually it can already be fairly detailed, right? Because a BOM doesn't just describe, you know, what kind of material is it made from, or what exactly, what kind of chip is this and what supplier does it come from? It also includes the price, the lead times, the minimum or the quantity, the status of the supplier, you know, are they already an approved supplier? Are they a new one? Da, 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 da. Is it a critical kind of component or not? Right? Because some components are really, I mean, think of screws, you know, it's usually not a very critical component. You can just buy relatively standard screws for most products. And be relatively, you know, confident that things will go right. However, if you buy, I don't know, if you buy a pen, well, the body has to be really nice, and the surface treatment of the body has to be nice, and there's a few things. The refillables are definitely important, you know, the ballpoint and the mechanism behind it. There's certain things that are quite important. Okay, I mean the payment terms, the whatever, right? Where you are, in the qualification of that component. There's a lot of things, and usually attached to that for the custom parts. For example, there's a little bit of mechanical design, maybe for the enclosure of an electrical product. And the CAD drawing, maybe the step file, or okay, let's say the computer aided design drawing that includes the 2D and 3D drawings of that part have to be referenced in the BOM, right? So you try to use it sort of as a central document, because really it is so important, right? And together with it then come with, you know, the color, the texture and the finishing and the tolerances and so on, right? So that's the BOM. There's a lot of things that go into it. Then once you're done with prototyping, you go into maybe tooling and some pre-production work and a pilot run and so on. As you make progress, actually the BOM gets more detailed, and the suppliers, especially suppliers of the critical components, have to be qualified, right? Because you don't go into a batch of 5,000, 10,000 pieces of a product where the main component supplier cannot make, you know, the quality that you desire. If 80% are good and 20% are bad, well, that's going to have a direct impact on your product, on your product quality. So you really want to minimize the chances that this happens, right? So it gets more and more and more complete, right? Mm. And there are reviews, there's a review process. You know, in a company that's well organized, there is a review process. It's not just one engineer, you know, doing things in his corner with a sourcing lady who looks for parts. And no, usually there is a review process, because there's a lot of mistakes that can be made in there, a lot of mistakes. And then this has a direct impact on losses, maybe due to purchasing the wrong parts, maybe, or in the wrong quantity, or specifying things the wrong way, you know? That's a direct loss for the manufacturer if they make this kind of mistake. Now, we've seen a number of quality problems where the manufacturer themselves didn't really know what was going on, and then they made a change in the BOM, and they thought, oh, it's fine, it's going to be no problem, and then they kind of lost track of what was from the previous batch and from the new batch, and then you go into a nightmare with some of the parts pass. I mean, the products, some of them pass, some of them fail, and nobody knows why. What kind of was this the first batch or the second batch? And I mean, it's goes together a little bit with traceability, right? It can be really a nightmare. So yeah, the manufacturer really truly is lost sometimes when they did not follow the right kind of review process.
I can imagine. It's interesting to hear how the BOM sort of evolves throughout the production process as well. So it's a lot more than just a sort of list of parts. As you've outlined all the different things that go into it. But for anybody listening, it's quite hard probably to sort of visualize this if you've not actually seen a BOM before. And one thing that you did do a little while ago, actually you did a video walkthrough talking through a typical BOM. I think it was for an N95 respirator mask, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe, yes.
and so that's actually a really good way to see how it's all structured and how it all works. So I'll add the link to that in the show notes, just so everyone can kind of go and have a look at that and add the words to a real sort of vision of how it's all structured.
It's not like there's one standard, you know, with an ISO standard saying this has to be exactly formatted this way with these columns and so on.
Right.
Every company kind of has a different format, but typically, yeah, it's a number of rows and then with a number of columns, and it's, you know, the most important are pretty much always there. Yeah.
Mm. So with a really important document, which is full of quite confidential information, How do we protect this? Because we've spoken a lot about protecting IP and protecting confidential information from the wrong guys. And I suppose if a bomb got into the wrong hands, this could be damaging for a number of different reasons. Yes. So do you have any tips on how to secure this?
So first, let me emphasize even more why it's important, why confidentiality is so important for this document. First, between the manufacturer and the customer, if the customer knows exactly what parts are purchased, and ideally also with the price, but they could also do a little bit of research and find the price on their own, they can put the finger exactly on, okay, how much are the materials costing the manufacturer, and what is the remaining part of the price I'm paying that goes to the manufacturer? You know, and does it make sense? Maybe they do very simple assembly, sort of kitting things together, packing them and shipping them. But maybe that very simple action is 40% of the price of the product, right? Mm. Doesn't make much sense, except if, you know, the materials are extremely cheap. So that's one thing. Another thing, you know, a lot of people buy product. Let's take electronic products, for example, because there's, you know, more and more products are becoming electronic these days, and connected and everything. So let's say you see a product and you say, oh, that's cool, I'd like to, you know, copy this and then maybe add a special feature and have a slightly different design outside, and, you know, it's going to be quick and I can see a market for that, and I'm not exactly doing the same thing anyway, so I should be fine. And you buy it, and you open it up and you look at the markings on the components. Now, sometimes you will see the markings and you can actually trace it back to the manufacturer and the exact model of component. And that can save you so much time if you can do that for all of them. Because then if you can also put your hands on the firmware, then you have the firmware and you know which components work with it, you can really replicate it pretty fast. You might have saved 3 months of hard work of electronic design. Not all components have these kinds of markings, by the way. And a lot of companies tell their manufacturers of components, hey, yeah, I need this again, but don't put any marking on it. Or maybe put my name on it. Even I saw that sometimes, so that anybody who opens one of my products will have no clue what the component is exactly. You know, except if they're really the one of the world specialists of that kind of all of these components, then maybe they can figure out the whole idea, right? And of course, there are ways to make it harder, right? So some people put, for example, epoxy on it. It's a thermoset plastic shop. They put a good layer on epoxy on it, but there are ways to remove that. I mean, you can do a thermal shock, for example. We found that you can sort of really remove the epoxy in kind of a neat way. That is just an example. So it's pretty hard to really hide things in some cases. Now, imagine if your competitor just put his hands on your product's bum. You know, again, it would be so easy for them to replicate a lot of the things that you've spent so much time doing. Sure. And it means in the end, their product would be closer than you would like to your product. Sort of a, you know, headbutt competition. Mm. That's not good for anybody, right? So it's really, really important. Now, what can you do? You know, basically, it is one of the most confidential documents if you develop a new product, together with the mechanical designs, the electronic designs, the firmware, code, and all of these things. And it goes by the same rules. You have to make sure that the people who put their hands on it, you know, are bound by a confidentiality agreement, and, you know, including non-use, non-disclosure, non-circumvention, I mean, the usual stuff. Mm. And yeah, there's not much really special for the bill of material. I would say it's just the same as the engineering deliverables, right? And you really have to have your assembly supplier have the bomb in their hands. I mean, maybe some companies have the budget to do that. They do all the design and the prototyping work and the sourcing of the components and the testing and all these kinds of things. And then they say, well, now we have a mature product ready for production or pretty close to ready to for production. Let's look for a manufacturer. Let's decide who will do the assembly, okay, and the testing and everything. And at this point, they have to give to share the bill of material to that supplier, obviously, right? But in most cases, it's built together between the manufacturer and the customer, and usually the customer does not keep does not get that information in their hands. So people don't even think of, you know, making sure that the manufacturer doesn't leak the bomb to any outside party. It's kind of funny to think about that, because it's sort of the supplier's own information, you know. Unfortunately, in these cases, that's what I was saying at the beginning of this episode, is if the buyer doesn't do all the work of sourcing the components and so on and so forth, well, why would the supplier give them the bomb for free, right? It's not really fair. So it's more like the supplier keeps it close to their chest and doesn't want to leak it to the buyer.
Yeah. Well, I have a question about that, though. If you do find yourself in this situation, then are there any tips on getting such a Chinese supplier to release the information?
Well, you can say, you're going to give me this information because there was this and this problem, and we suspect that it's because you messed with the bomb, and we have to have the bomb, and we have to know exactly what it is, and you have to confirm that you will not make any changes. And it depends on how afraid they are that you will leave, and it depends on your negotiation, your you know, how much power you have at that moment to force them to do different things. I've seen buyers get that. Now, do they get the full bomb? Maybe not. You know, maybe some of the components are missing, a lot of the columns are missing. Yes, they will never get the full bomb, I would think. So, but I've seen it. You know, people can say, well, this is not good. If you want to keep doing business with us, we have to change the way we work, and you have to give us this information. Yeah, I've seen that sometimes. Suppliers open up and give some information. Yeah.
Okay. So are there any other reasons that you can mention why a bomb is so important to a buyer or a manufacturer?
So let's say you buy, I don't know, a pen. I was saying that before.
Yeah.
And the body is in metal, and it goes through some kind of surface treatment. Let's say it's powder coated, and there are quality issues. And your supplier doesn't do the painting. You know, they just do the assembly. So they say, we're gonna work on it. Yeah, it's gonna be better next time. And next time is the same or worse. There's no improvement, and so on. And so on and so forth. If you know who does the powder coating, you can actually say, well, we're going to send someone there, you know, next batch. When are they going to make the powder coating for this batch? Thursday, Friday. Okay, we'll have somebody there. You know, and then you can see with your own eyes, or you can have one of your representatives do that and actually say, well, this is because they don't prepare it nicely before in the bath, or they store it there with a lot of grease and a lot of dirt and da da da. And then oh, when you know they don't control the kind of paint that they buy, and whatever, you know, it could be a lot of things. So you can actually push for improvements, and that usually leads to, okay, they're not willing to improve, so let's look for another one. Or yes, if we push them, they will improve, so okay, let's push them, right? At least you get to the next step. You don't just count on your supplier and you know, can you do something about painting? Yeah, they say it's going to be better next time, right? Okay, that's one thing. But also, let's take the other perspective of the manufacturer. Not that many manufacturers actually have an ERP in China. They might have an ERP just for accounting, just to making sure that the books are sort of okay and in line with the accounting standards of China and so on. But not that many have an ERP that includes what is purchased, what is sold, what is in inventory. You might say that this is like the most basic modules that are put in place in an ERP. But in a lot of small and mid-sized Chinese manufacturers, people are resisting that. They don't want it. And the ones who resist it the most are the purchasers. So if they just work with their Excel files that are kind of messy and or only they know where it is in what folder and so on, then when someone says, hey, this product, we're going to make 15,000, you know, go ahead and purchase everything. Okay, tuck, we purchase it, you know, and then they tell the accounting staff, hey, wire this much to this one, wire this much to this one, you know. They do the purchase request, transfer to purchase orders, and so on. But they know that if they are fired, the company would not really know, you know, some of this information is going to be a pain in the neck. And they might lose some of this information. So, you know, one more reason why the information in the BOM keeps changing sometimes. And also, if management doesn't know exactly who is supplying what part for what cost, if it's not easy to find out, then they cannot audit the purchasing practices. So that's why you buy some simple common accessories at 5 times the market price, but you don't know, because the purchaser is buying her fourth apartment, you know, and buying her third BMW, right? So extremely common. In China, it's not a matter of how much they get. It's a matter of, it's not a matter of whether they get money. It's a matter of how much in most cases. So by putting in place an ERP, you force, you know, the fact that every product has a BOM, and management or finance, typically finance, can do some auditing on the market price of the you know, a few parts here and there randomly, and if they find certain things that really cannot be reconciled with reality, then they put the price and they put the finger on something, right? So the bill of material is such a central document in manufacturing. Buyers cannot just say, oh, you know, whatever, I buy a finished product. If you don't have the BOM of your product, you don't really know what your product is, you know, is that simple.
Well, as a closing summary, I think that pretty much nails it, Renaud. Thank you. Yeah, so really good view into what the bill of materials is today. And hopefully that's been a real eye-opener for a lot of the listeners.
Cool. Yeah, good one. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. And to everybody listening, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, don't forget to like and share, and you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other places that you get your podcasts from.